Standard bearer Bernie Sanders, and I'm going to vote for Hillary Clinton. It's a choice between neo-fascism, Donald Trump, and neoliberalism, Hillary Clinton. Donald Trump must be defeated, and not just defeated. He must be defeated decisively. There must be a repudiation of these ultra-right-wing and fascist tendencies that are supporting him and that are in his movement. The struggle against neoliberalism, which has been going on for the past 40 years, will continue after November the 8th. And the Bernie Sanders movement is at a critical stage. Bernie Sanders did something that was tremendous in the political arena. He widened the space for progressive politics. But more than that, he proved that there is a critical mass of people in the United States that will support progressive, even radical politics. And the challenge at this point is for all of those forces, because there's one force, there's the Bernie Sanders movement vis-a-vis the Democratic Party and the establishment and corporate leadership of that party. But within the Bernie Sanders movement itself, there are many tendencies. The question is, are those tendencies going to be able to resolve their contradictions to the point, not eliminate them, but at least modify them to the point that they can hold together and keep this movement going, or are they going to explode?
Larry Hamm, chair of the People's Organization for Progress in New Jersey, and actor Danny Glover speaking with Juan Gonzalez and I last month at the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia. That does it for the show. I'll be speaking in Seattle Friday night at the Washington State Convention Center. Check our website. Mark's now produced by Mike Berkner, Mean Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Produced by Her, a screening of four documentaries that were made in the Produced by Her media program. The screening will be August 28th at 5 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater in Portland. The short films explore the commercial sexual exploitation of children in Oregon, the importance of safe space in the LGBTQ community, women and street art, and the experience of Black girls in Portland. Again, that's Produced by Her, a documentary screening Sunday, August 28th at 5 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater, 4111 Northeast Broadway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is celebrating National Radio Day on Saturday, August 20th. We'll be with our friends Freeform Portland, KPSU, and X-Ray at the 10th Annual Centarpalooza at 2801 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. National Radio Day honors the excitement of radio listening and producing. KBOO stands together with other stations, independent producers, and folks who share a media equity mission on this joyful day. Again, that's National Radio Day, Saturday, August 20th, celebrated on air and at Centarpalooza from noon to 10 p.m. at 2801 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm/NRD2016.
And good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. My name's Paul Rowland. Be with you for the next hour. We started off there with Joanne Shenandoah with this song by Peter LaFarge, As Long as the Grass Shall Grow. Of course, those words refer to the language that was in many treaties with the indigenous nations of what became known as the United States of America. And we're going to be talking about Native sovereignty and what's going on at the Sacred Stones Camp in North Dakota on the Missouri River. Of course, the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation was created after the Fort Laramie Treaty of 1868, which actually created the Great Sioux Reservation, which included all of present-day South Dakota west of the Missouri River, but including the sacred Missouri River. The Black Hills were subsequently taken away unilaterally by the U.S. government, and the Great Sioux Reservation was later reduced and then split up into six separate reservations, including the Standing Rock. That's a very, very bare bones history, but we're going to speak with someone who knows it a lot better than I do. As we said, we're talking with LaDonna Bravebull Allard, who is the owner of the land where the Sacred Stones Spirit Camp, the resistance to the Dakota Access Pipeline, which is a massive project underway already, very suddenly. Good morning, LaDonna.
Good morning.
So there's a lot to cover because there's a lot of history and there's a lot going on, and there's a lot that's happened just in the last few days. So with your willingness, and I thank you so much for coming on the air at this very intense time for you all. Tell us, there's been so many back and forth lawsuits. There's the work was suspended, I believe. What's happening right now where you are?
Right now, at the Sacred Stone Camp, there the workers are going to try to come in today. I know that they have issued order for the National Guard to come out. Our people are on the front line in prayer. The camp has expanded from a small group of maybe 20 people originally who lived at the camp 24/7 to the estimate they told me this morning is 5,000 people.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
And all the Oshetishakoan nations have come in now. But not only that, the Onondagas, Asafi, the Apaches, Lummies, people are coming from all over the United States to stand with us. It is kind of amazing, overwhelming, and who to believe this would happen.
So just last Thursday, so let's go back a little further. So how long has this, so this is a pipeline from the Bakken oil region of North Dakota, northwest of where you are, that would go all the way down to, I believe, Illinois. It's a 1,000-some miles long. And when did you all become aware that this was a proposed project?
So this is the longest pipeline to ever be built. It'll go through four states. And in 2014... Dakota Access had come to the tribe to inform them that they were going to build this pipeline. I remember the day, because Washte Wee Young, who was the Tribal Historic Preservation Officer at that time, told me they were coming. And so the departments, the tribal government, all met with Dakota Access. And they showed us a PowerPoint of this project. And the chairman, Dave Archambault II, had stood up and said, we do not support oil, and we do not support this pipeline. And then the Tribal Historic Preservation Office did the same. They had written statements drawn up. And so everybody talked, and they had food. Dakota Access had brought food, so all the Indian people said, don't eat their food. So we didn't. And I remember at the end, I walked up to a young woman who was from Dakota Access, and I said, remember me. I just looked at your maps. I'm the closest landowner. Remember my face. I will stand there. If I stand alone, I will stand there. You cannot put this pipeline next to my home. And so with that whole process, the tribe started writing letters and trying to see what our legal standing was. And the tribe really did work hard for 2 years. I kept the folder of every document, every email, from the Army Corps to the Fish and Wildlife, Advisory Council on Historic Preservation, Dakota Access. I kept every file. So we have been communicating. And what had happened was, all of a sudden, Dakota Access stopped talking to us. They took us off their maps. They put their maps up. We're not even acknowledged anymore because we objected.
You mean you, as the Standing Rock Tribe?
The Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, yes.
So, okay, so continue with this history in a second. So, but just to get a sense, so the Standing Rock Reservation straddles the what is known contemporarily as the North and South Dakota, is your property on the reservation itself?
Yes.
So it's on the far south?
North.
The far north corner. Okay.
We are in Cannonball. Cannonball is the northern community of Standing Rock. We're 2.3 million acres. And where I am is at the mouth of the Cannonball and Missouri River.
Okay.
So where they're building the pipeline is the view.
Okay, so continue. So they stopped talking to you all, and then what happened? Hello? Oh no. We'll have our port operator Liam call LaDonna back. Hopefully that's only a temporary issue. I heard rumors that there's messing with cell phone towers and stuff. I don't think that's true, but we're not going to get into speculation. But we'll have LaDonna Brave Bull Allard back on the line as soon as possible. She, as I said, is at the Sacred Stones Spirit Resistance Camp there in Cannonball, North Dakota. And they're resisting the Bakken Oil Pipeline, Dakota Access Pipeline. As she said, the longest pipeline built, apparently. And there's massive, massive support being shown by indigenous people and allies from across the country, but especially from the what was originally the Great Sioux Nation people. All the different tribes are coming together. You're back with us, LaDonna. Thank you. So, you know, when the whole KXL pipeline issue became a big issue, and statements were made by some of the tribes that were fighting that it was basically a tantamount to a declaration of war, and there was a united opposition building, not just among the tribes, but among a lot of the non-native ranchers and other allies. And that seems to be, and that, of course, was staved off when Obama vetoed that leg of the pipeline that would have cut across Nebraska and a number of other states. But it seems like that's actually happening now, that this Dakota Access, which sort of passed under the radar of a lot of activists, there hasn't been nearly as much attention paid to that. So, but you were in the middle of the story where you'd been, the tribe since 2014 had been doing everything they could to follow the process, to object, to try to stop this project. So on what basis, again, was the tribe objecting to this project? And then continue with the historical narrative to lead up to what's happening now.
Okay, so they were filing papers following the historic preservation, the Environmental Protection Act, the Clean Water Act, following the laws and codes, putting out information, and we weren't getting responses. We weren't getting responses from anybody. And then people just stopped communicating with us. So we kept on trying to communicate with the agencies that were working with Dakota Access. So I'm going to bring you up to present. So on, I can't remember if it was February, we got the letter that Dakota Access was planning to come through. And we didn't know exactly what to do. And so I went to a meeting, and the Long Soldier District meeting, and the chairman came in and talked about Dakota Access to the community, and people were getting up talking about what we should do. And we had a group. It was Trey Braun, who came down from Cheyenne River, who worked with XL Pipeline. And she said, if we could start a camp. And so at the end of the meeting, I stood up and I said, I have land. So she said, show me your land. So we went down the next day and I showed her. And she said, we can have a camp. And I said, well, when do you want to start? She said, April 1st. I said, in 5 days? She said, yes. And so April 1st, everything exploded. I have to say that it has been amazing and overwhelming to watch people come together. I've watched people quit their jobs and come live in the camp with their children and family and live there every day. There's no electricity. There's, you know, porta potties. There's no modern conveniences. And they're there every day, praying every day, training every day, preparing for what is now happening.
And why Sacred Stones? Why the name?
Because the traditional name of the area is the place where they make sacred stones. On that area, if you 20 years ago, if you came down the river, you would see these huge sandstone, round sandstones all along the river. And when I was a child, the river used to come and hit the Missouri River, and it created this whirlwind, and it created all these round sandstones. And when the Army Corps came with the Pick Sloan and flooded us, the river no longer made the round sandstones, but the people always called it the place where they make the sacred stone.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I named the camp after the original name of the place. If you could come and see my land, it is so beautiful. I'm in awe every time I go down, because on the opposite side where the pipeline is going is an old Arikara village, the historic Cannonball Ranch, the first trading post in the area. Opposite side, Ihunkdua camps, my people's camps. Then on the opposite, and on the Cannonball side, we have the Mandan camp. It was a huge trade area where people traded. It was also an area where people kept the peace because it was a trading area. And there are so ceremonial sites and burial sites and medicine rocks and origination of people sites. There is so much history right there that I can't understand how the state and the federal government don't understand how important these areas are to Native people. They are the center of who we are. Our footprints in the land, our hearts are in that land. We can tell you the history of all of these sites, who put them there, how they got there, why they are there, why we go there to pray. And then in current history, and current history to me is after 1900, there are Sundance sites there all along that area. And so for me, it's really hard to see a destruction of an area that is so important to our people. It's our footprint. It's our history. It's our culture. It's our spirituality. It's everything.
And I've heard a lot about there's a number of crossings of rivers, and right there would be a crossing of the Missouri River. And I understand that the water supplies for the Standing Rock Reservation come from the Missouri River. And we all know how many pipelines have ruptured over the course of time here since there have been pipelines, and especially in the last few years, the Yellowstone River, the Kalamazoo River in Michigan, and just terrible, terrible devastation. So obviously, the Standing Rock people are quite aware of that. That I understand that's a major reason for opposing this project.
It's one of the reasons. So in North Dakota alone, we've had 200 plus pipeline breaks. They're not advertised. You won't see them in the media, but we know when they break. One of our problems is the oil companies are not cleaning them up. Once the oil spill happens, the land is damaged for hundreds of years. Right now, because oil spills are happening north of us, we are now seeing the repercussions of we're pulling fish out with tumors and sores and really some really bad things coming out of the river. But right where we live, they're planning to put that pipeline underneath the Missouri River, underneath a burial ground, because there's an island right out there they have to cross. They're planning to go 82 feet down into the bed of the river. I know my river. I grew up on it. We have a strong undercurrent. The bedrock moves. The river changes. The river lives. It's alive. And so it's constantly changing, and there's no way they can stabilize that river. In Bismarck, they built a bridge, and they put the bridge foundations 82 feet down, and the bridge is moving now because the river is alive. I am not sure how they plan to keep this pipeline from not breaking. It will break. So we estimated, when we looked at it, when this pipeline breaks, less than 2 minutes, it will already be in the early Head Start building. And less than 5 minutes, it'll be in our elementary school, because both of these schools are right along the river. It'll be 15 minutes before it takes down our water intake, because we get all our water from the Missouri River, and we will be without water. And I keep asking, who is going to come to help us? Who will come when we have no water? You go down and ask the Dene people who came. They have had no water since they destroyed their water system. Who is helping them? No one. And I keep saying that. Who will help us? Who will come when they take the last of the most precious thing we have in the world, water? You have to remember, our bodies are 70% water. Everything in the world is water. Water is life. Water is our sacred being. We must do everything to protect the water. Without water, we all die. It doesn't matter who you are. Water is a human thing. Water is a living thing. We all need the water. And I have a hard time understanding the concept of why other people don't understand that.
Well, I guess they're looking at their corporate bottom lines and their charts and their diagrams. So I'm speaking with LaDonna Brave Bull Allard from the Sacred Stones Spirit Camp in Cannonball, North Dakota. You're listening to Wednesday Talk Radio. This is a talk show, and the number to call in, give us a few minutes to just give a little bit more of the background here. It will be 503-231-8187. So we're up to, you know, you said this camp began on April 1st, and there's been people living there full-time since. And then I understand things really speeded up really quickly, I guess, at the end of July, when word came down that this was actually going to be, August 8th, that it says here, John Eagle, Tribal Historic Preservation Officer of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, said the nation received a call from Dakota Access on August 8th to give 48-hour notice that they would begin construction on an access corridor. So not a lot of time. I guess you all expected it was coming, but what happened when you got the word that it was going to be, is they're going to start construction?
Okay, so I will go back. We had went and we got our lawyers, and we were going to be filing a lawsuit. And when we were filing, that's when we got the notice for the 48-hour.
Aha. Uh-huh. So they must have got wind of the lawsuit and speeded up their process, probably.
Yeah, so that's basic. I want to tell you my personal interest in this.
Uh-huh.
Because I want you to understand, I'm not an activist. I never imagined that I would step up. I never imagined that this would happen. But this is really personal to me. Because I live on the Cannonball, because they were building this pipeline next to where my father and my family and all of us grew up, that is good. But I am a mother. And so I buried my son on top of that hill. And I just cannot fathom them building a pipeline next to my son's grave. I can't allow that. I must protect his grave. And so, see, this is kind of personal to me. It's not about all of this other thing. It's about protecting my family. And so I just want to say that much, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have this other thing there. It's called an artesian well. When that pipeline breaks, we lose our well. So, but that's my personal part of all this.
Well,
that's happening. So
that's what gives...
Back to the 48 notice. When we got the notice, we notified the tribes and our lawyers, and we're trying to figure out what to do. And for me, I went to the camp and said, what do we do? And they said, call out and tell people. So I put out a notice, please come help. Please come pray with us. Please help us stop this. And people listened. People started coming. People started contacting us. And when Dakota Access was coming to start the construction, people came from everywhere. Every day I get notices that people are coming. And so it's been kind of overwhelming. It happened fast. I was not quite sure what was going to happen. I told people, if I was the only one standing, I will stand there to stop this. And that is not what is happening. What is happening is all the people stood up. The grandma stood up. The children stood up. So when we started this camp, there was these young people, Bobby Three Legs and Joseph White Eyes. First, she started a small run at home for the Dakota Access. And then she said, we're going to run to Omaha. And so all these young people ran to Omaha to tell the colonel, the Army Corps, not to issue the permit for Dakota Access. Then she said, we're going to run to Washington, D.C. Amazing young woman, amazing young people. And so they ran to Washington, D.C. to tell Washington, please save our water. So I want to mention these two young people, Bobby Three Legs and Joseph White Eyes.
Mm-hmm.
These are leaders, even though they're young people now. They did an amazing thing. And to them, helped this bring that call out. And then we did a media campaign with our youth where all of the children got up and spoke amazing words, sacred words, and called the people. And so for me, this whole thing is from our young people.
And I understand your official tribal leadership has stood up strong too. On just a week ago, on last Thursday, 10 tribal citizens were arrested for blocking the approach to the site where pipeline workers were offloading heavy equipment. And then 6 more people were arrested the following day on Friday, including your own tribal chairman, who you mentioned earlier, David Archambault II, and Tribal Council Representative Dana Yellowfat. And I understand there are some tensions with the workers. Obviously, you know, once they get the go ahead, they're pretty gung ho. They need to fulfill the contracts and get this thing underway. We've seen it many times, but sounds like there's a increasing opposition. And so the tribe filed a lawsuit. And there's going to be a hearing just in a few days, I understand. I think on Friday will be the hearing to request an injunction against the construction. On the other hand, the Dakota Access Corporation filed a suit against the protesters. And a judge just yesterday, I believe, or the day before, granted an injunction against your tribal chairman and others from protesting. So it sounds like the battle lines are clearly drawn. No work was done yesterday. Today you're expecting work. And say that again. How many people are there camped at your camp? This is just amazing to me.
5,000.
Goodness.
And more are coming. So with the lawsuits, to me, I've really don't understand that whole concept, because they told us you have a right to protest. You can be on the road, you can be in the ditch, and you can still protest. And we said, okay. All they're saying is you can't be on the construction site. I said, okay. So our people will still be there. It's not an injunction against protest. It's an injunction us being on construction site. So just to clear that up. So the people still have a right for peaceful protest and prayer, and they will be there.
And obviously, you wouldn't have any idea whether people might be planning more active protests.
Our people stand in nonviolence and prayer. So with that, we are also watching the other construction sites. People are praying in different areas. The chairman of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe stood up in direct action, but also we have all the additional chairmen that are now there on the line.
They're there at the site?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. So I just want to interject. We're about halfway through the program. Again, I'm speaking with LaDonna Brave Bull Allard, who's at the Sacred Stones Spirit Camp, the resistance to the Dakota Access Pipeline, which, if constructed, would transport up to 570,000 barrels of Bakken crude oil. And we know Bakken crude oil because it exploded at a town just up the Columbia River from where I'm speaking and where my signal is reaching now. To Mosier, and has exploded in many other places around the country. It's a 1,200-mile proposed pipeline from North Dakota to a transfer terminal in Illinois. So I just want to say that on Saturday, August 20th, there will be a rally to stand with Standing Rock here in Portland, from 1 to 4 p.m. That's at the Portland waterfront at Southwest Ankeny and NATO Parkway. Again, that's this Saturday, August 20th, to stand with the 5,000-plus people and more arriving who are protesting the Dakota Access Pipeline. That's this Saturday, 1 to 4 p.m. The number to call in with your comments and questions is 503-231-8187. This is a history in the making. This is a unique opportunity to interact with one of the people who's there on site, live from this major protest against fossil fuel development at a time, of course, I'm sure you and other people are aware of the massive flooding that is going on in Louisiana, the massive wildfires, some 80,000 people east of Los Angeles under threat of evacuation from a wildfire that I think just began yesterday. These things are happening an incredible rate. And it's obviously these things are connected. So I invite people to call in again, 503-231-8187. So one thing that struck me is there's also another legal case going on in Iowa. Some farmers in Iowa are protesting the pipeline, Dakota Access Pipeline, there through their part of the country. And it's on the basis of eminent domain. And this is a private corporation, and it's eminent domain was basically developed mainly for public utilities that had a public purpose. And there's never really been a adjudication that I know of at a Supreme Court basis to decide whether this new uses of eminent domain, basically to allow private for-profit corporations to use it to build their projects. But do you see a kinship, a similarity, with what historically the government and corporations have done to expropriate native land, and this current what's being done with this current pipeline and other such pipelines?
It is all the same. It's also with the nationwide permit by the Army Corps that it shouldn't be used for private corporations. But we are seeing a lot of private corporations now using these mechanisms to get their projects done. Legally, it shouldn't happen. I want to say that Iowa, Illinois, and the tribes all stand with us. We are all filing and notifying each other of filing together. And so whatever Bold Iowa does, Bold Nebraska, Bold Illinois, we stand with them and their lawsuits.
And what are those organizations?
Eminent Domain went to North Dakota when they first started doing Dakota Access Pipeline, too.
And that's something that people in Oregon know about, because the pipeline, the Jordan Cove pipeline, that would have... and still might. It's still on the table that people might not be aware of. The liquefied natural gas plant proposed to bring fracked gas from the from Colorado and Wyoming to the coast of Oregon. It was temporarily put on hold by the Army Corps of Engineers because the corporation couldn't demonstrate the public utility of it. That public benefit outweighed the possible harm, but we know they're going to come back with a further proposal, and that seems to be the key question, and whether that question will actually be able to be heard. The idea that the potential harm, the danger of these projects clearly outweigh any public benefit. I guess that's the big question that everybody's fighting for.
So my dream, my hope, my vision is everybody stand up. Everybody stand up to protect the land and the water. Our grandchildren have to drink water. Our people have to live on the land. I don't care who you are. This is a human issue. We have to save the world. And so I'm hoping by standing up, we can also help all of these other states, groups, organizations that are also standing up. We have to stand up.
Well, I've never heard of anything quite like what's going on there. So I'm always heartened when there's too many bad new things that are happening in the world that are frankly quite frightening. It's good to see some good new things happening, like 5,000 people coming together to oppose this. So one thing we haven't really talked about directly, I mentioned the Fort Laramie Treaty of 1868. The whole issue of sovereignty, I know that that Obama himself went to Standing Rock just a little over 2 years ago, actually to your hometown of Cannonball. Were you there present at that meeting?
Yes, I was. And I was there when Obama came.
And he made some, I understand he made some promises regarding tribal sovereignty.
Yes. And we are saying, please, President Obama, keep your word. Don't be like the others. Keep your word. So even as Dakota Access files this restraining order, we're saying, we are a sovereign nation. We are a sovereign nation. Your restraining orders in state court don't matter. Because we are nations. We are treaty people. And even as this land that they're going through, there are many issues. We have the 1851 Fort Laramie Treaty that defines our boundaries from the Platte River to the Heart River to the Missouri to the Bighorn Mountains. We have the Ihunkdoa claim, the unresolved land claim that takes the Missouri River to the Minnesota River. That is our claim. And then we have the Fort Laramie Treaty of 1868. And we also have our tribal alliances that declare from the Kennebaw to the Heart as neutral territory, so that a place of ceremony and prayer. So we have all of these things that we understand. We just don't think the United States understands. I keep asking people, why is treaties the supreme law of the land? It is because the United States wrote them into the U.S. Constitution. If their Constitution stands, so does our treaties.
So explain that, though, for people who may not be familiar. You're saying that these injunctions were filed in state courts. Is that right?
Yes.
And that does seem to be a strange, because as you're saying, if there are sovereignty issues, obviously the government doesn't want to acknowledge that. But if there are, they should be adjudicated in federal court. But unfortunately, the timeline for these things are often too slow to help in such situations where construction is going on at a rapid pace. That's all too often the case.
Yes.
Well, listen, we've got a caller. We've got Becky on the line. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning. I'm calling to let my voice be known that I am standing with Standing Rock. This is a very important issue of our time. We're not an invisible people. This is affecting the Oglala Aquifer. It's one of the largest aquifers that our country has, and the amount of water that can be contaminated and damaged is going to be untold numbers of people affected when this disaster does happen. A disaster was foretold by their ancestors, the Sioux people, about the black snake coming. They knew of this. They told of this. This time is now. It's up to all of us, you know, to press hard to honor those treaties, that we're a nation based on law, on the law of great peace that was taken from back then. But they don't seem to understand that we're still here. They talk about us in history books like we're dead and gone. We're not. We remain. We are the carekeepers of this earth, and we stand up, and we will let it be known.
Oh, thank you for that.
Well, Peter.
And again, the number is 503-231-8187. To call in and join this conversation, this opportunity to speak with someone who is standing up, along with many others. And a crucial moment, the construction has not resumed yet. So people, I called the governor of North Dakota yesterday to ask not to call in the National Guard. And I heard from the person who answered the phone that lots of people were calling. So people can still call in. I don't actually have that number on me, unfortunately. Maybe you have that number or someone else does who can call in. But it's probably on some of the Facebook pages or websites. So you understand that you think that the National Guard is going to be called in. Is there a reason you think that?
Just some of our scouts have reported them.
Ah. Okay. So it could get even more intense. The whole world is watching this one. So I just have a couple announcements. Again, Stand with Standing Rock this Saturday, August 20, 1 to 4 p.m. at the Portland Waterfront at Southwest Ankeny and NATO Parkway to express your solidarity. Also on Saturday, Rock Against the TPP. So that'll be just before the Rock Against the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. That's going to be 5 to 10, and it's going to be hot, folks. So bring a lot of water and dress appropriately. That's going to be at Director Park. I don't actually have the address of that, but I'm sure it's easy to find. It's in downtown Portland. And there's going to be an afternoon teach-in at Portland State before that on the west side of Neuberger Hall. And there's also going to be a fossil fuels and trade workshop from 2:30 to 3:30 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church Elliott Center. So that's 2:30 to 3, then 4 to 4:45. There will be a teach-in and then a march against the Trans-Pacific Partnership. That's at the west side of Neuberger Hall. And then at 5 o'clock to 10 o'clock, there's a big concert with all kinds of performers and speakers. I don't actually have them here, but you can check it out on their Facebook page, Rock Against the TPP. And before that, of course, there'll be Stand with Standing Rock. Lots going on this Saturday. Again, it's going to be hot, so be prepared. So I'm speaking again with LaDonna Brave Bull Allard from the Sacred Stones Camp in North Dakota, Cannonball, North Dakota. And a number to call in is 503-231-8187. So what else can people do? I know there's, I saw there's a GoFundMe, site. Is that officially sanctioned? The GoFundMe.com/Sacred Stone Camp where people can contribute?
Yes. So we have the GoFundMe, account. We have two GoFundMe accounts for Sacred Stone Camp, and we have one for legal funds. Those are both sanctioned by the camp. And so we need legal funds. As people go to jail, we are doing our best to get them out of jail. I think we are averaging, 18 now people have went to jail.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and we have got them out. Scattered Their Own, which is a Native group, musician group, and Tito, who is a Native comedian, have both went down. Of course, the chairman, vice chairman, many representatives. I want to say, you know, from the beginning of starting our camp, we had a man come. His name is Bill Wilson from Portland, Oregon, who's represented Oregon in our camp since day one.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he is at the front line now. So I just want to say that much.
Right on.
And we give thanks for him.
And obviously people can go there, I take it. People are invited to go join if they're, I'm sure there are rules of the camp to respect. Are there any guidelines if people do want to make it out there?
So we ask people, because we are an all-natural camp, we don't have electricity, we don't have running water, and so everybody must come self-sufficient, bring your tent. We are asking people to donate tents to people who don't have them, sleeping bags, and we haul in water every day for the people. So water is a major component everywhere we go. And I have my personal things. Please clean up after yourself, clean up the land, and make sure you pray every day.
So that's
the area that my home is. We use it as an eagle release place, and so we have abundance of eagles there. And so since the camp has started, we've released 3 wounded eagles back into the environment there. I believe we'll have another eagle release coming up soon here. It is a major eagle nesting area, and so we like to keep the environment as much as natural as possible, because it is a home of the buffalo. There's many buffalo there. There's eagles there. There's turkeys. deer, plenty of wildlife everywhere.
So we'll give again the websites and more information about how people can contact you at the end of the program. But we have a Jackie on the line. Go ahead, you're on the air, Jackie. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, you're on the air.
Okay, hi. Yes, I'd like to say hello to LaDonna and thank her for being so generous and standing up for the people and for the water. I know some of my family members are there with her now. I am Ihonktuan from the Yankton Sioux tribe in South Dakota, and I know my Aunt Faith's Spotted Eagle is there now. And I'm a journalist. And I did cover the Keystone XL pipeline fight, and I know a lot of other people, pipeline fighters up there as well, including Joy Brown and other folks. So thank you for all you're doing, and thank you for informing the community it's such a tragic thing that we're still fighting these things this time, and that they put the pipeline right there in such a an amazing place. I mean, what you were saying about the Singing Rocks, and it's just what they also built a dam on the Yankton Sioux Reservation at Fort Randall. And my dad remembers when the river went silent, and that was a really painful thing for our people.
Yeah. So, Jackie, I know you've done a lot of writing on these issues, and specifically the issue of Native sovereignty. You have any words about this particular case and the whole issue of eminent domain relating to that? Is it?
Yeah. Well, they rather cynically put the pipeline just north of the boundary of the reservation. And so the problem is that if it does break, all the cleanup will land in the lap of the tribe, of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe. And so and you saw what happened in the Navajo Nation when the Animas River spill happened, the Gold King mine. And to this day, the tribe is still, has a lot of, the tribe has to pay to clean up. It was Navajo, about 2,000 Navajo farmers who suffered because of that. And of course, whoever owned that mine originally is long gone. These companies don't stick around to clean up their mess. And it falls in the hands of the federal government and also of the tribes, and the local people are the traditional people, the community people living on the land are the ones who are hurt the most. And so it's shocking to me that, you have to understand that Standing Rock and Cheyenne River, the Sioux Reservation, is the largest contiguous land left to the Osheti Shakowin, our people, to the Lakota Dakota people. And so it's preserving it, keeping it healthy is really important. It's a land area the size of Israel, of El Salvador. It's a big chunk of land, but it could be seriously damaged. And they have a right to have a say about that. They have had no consultation. That's the bare minimum that you would expect in a project like this, that the tribe would expect. They have had none, and there was actually no environmental impact statement made. And many federal agencies counseled against this pipeline. And the Army Corps of Engineers in late July just decided to go ahead with it. And it's really a tragedy.
Okay. Thank you for that, Jackie. Appreciate your contribution. It's obviously Indian country as a whole is really standing up for this. So we'll see where it goes, and we'll continue to cover this here on KBOO. So once again, just remind people how they can get a hold of you all, LaDonna.
So Sacred Stone Camp, our camp phone number is 701-301-2238. That is the camp phone number. And then we have the Sacred Stone Camp post office box, 1011 Fort Yates, North Dakota, 58538. And then we have the GoMe Fund, which is Sacred Stone Camp. And then we have a GoMe Fund for our legal fund.
GoFundMe, yeah.
GoFundMe, sorry.
That's all right.
and then we also have
other entities that are trying to raise money, but these are our two funds for the camp. You can go to our Facebook page, No Dakota Access and Treaty Territory, and find information. We try to post videos every day. I should inform everybody that Dakota Access has locked out all the cell phones, so now the cell phones can't work on the site. They have a plane and drones that go above us. And
so that is true.
So we did,
wow.
Yeah, so we did live streaming up until yesterday, and then nobody can use their cell phones. And so we're we cannot do live streaming. So people are still doing videos, but they have to leave the site to be able to upload them. So we're still trying to get the word out. They have put on a whole media block against us, a blackout. But we're still doing our best trying to get the word out.
Right here in the United States of America. Yeah, they said things like that, you know, happened in China and, you know, were happening in the countries, you know, after the crackdown on the Arab Spring. But who would think that would happen in the United States of America?
So we have been, Dakota Access has sent drones into the camp. They come about five or six times. They will even go down to look into people's tents. And the only thing that we can do is record the time and dates of the drone. So we've kept the log of everyone, every drone that's come in, and they come in daily. We have helicopters that are flying and taking pictures of the camp since day one. We have the planes that fly over constantly, and we also have boats from Dakota Access monitoring everything we do.
Must feel like a war. Anyway, let's not use those terminology. But to me, it sounds like. Sorry, go ahead.
It's like they're using everything to try to deter us, but. The other day, I stood and I watched these women who stood there in prayer and made everybody so uncomfortable. And then the next day, I saw these women go through the fence and stand in front of the bulldozer and told them no. And and these are women. And the Dakota Access employees got off and took off running. And they didn't do anything but pray. They stood in front of the bulldozer and pray. So to me, I think we have the stronger weapon. We have prayer.
Well, let's hope that the support of more and more people will strengthen your prayers and your position there on the ground in opposition to this project. Again, we've been speaking with LaDonna Brave Bull Allard, who we are very thankful has been able to come on this program here from the Sacred Stone Resistant Camp in Cannonball, North Dakota, against the Dakota Access Pipeline, which, if built, would bring massive amounts of open up more and more oil production, possibility of transporting more and more Bakken oil, which is so dangerous both to the climate and to the water and land. And we're about out of time. We've given the www.gofundme.com. We got Kay. I think we have maybe 30 seconds for a quick comment. Go ahead.
Well, I want to thank everybody. I was kind of shocked that you're holding a thing for us. So I thank each and every one of you. I thank you so much. This has been all very overwhelming to see the nations come together, to see Indian people live again, to see people standing with prayer, caring for their land and their water so their children and grandchildren can live. I thank you.
And, and we thank you. And that's all for this program here on KBOO. Thank you for everyone who called, and thank you so much to LaDonna Brave Bull Allard, who's standing up there at the Sacred Stones Camp. People, go look up information. Look at the program page for this program, Wednesday Talk Radio, and find all the information. So stay tuned for more programming here on KBOO Community Radio, KBOO Portland. This is Paul Rowland for Wednesday Talk Radio. Thanks, Liam, for manning the board.
Cable Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Avalon Sanctuary Fundraiser, Saturday, August 27th, from 4 to 9 p.m. at 19th and Avalon in Southeast Portland. Avalon Sanctuary is a dead-end street that is being turned into a community green space. The first part of the event will be an open blue grass jam, and storytellers will share the history of inner Southeast Portland. Again, that's Avalon Sanctuary Fundraiser on Saturday, August 27th from 4 to 9 p.m. at Southeast 19th and Avalon in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Minority Cannabis Business Association Marley Natural Expungement Day, August 27th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Village Ballroom in Portland. Expungement means to set aside arrests or convictions. Attendees that have applicable nonviolent cannabis-related crimes on their criminal record will leave the event with their expungement paperwork approved and processed by sponsored legal assistants. Again, that's the Expungement Day, August 27th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Village Ballroom, 704 Northeast Deakum Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.